Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And if I sound a little rough this week, it's because I've either got a cold or I've got allergies. And honestly, as a person who's never really gotten sick or ever had allergies until they started to get older, I honestly don't know how to tell the difference. I feel like I've got some kind of brain-eating disease. Because I feel a little weird right now. It could have something to do with battling it out with both allergy medication and cold medicine to see which one wins. That could be why I'm feeling a little weird right now. My throat's a little gravelly because I've been coughing. My brain's out. And speaking of brains out, I met today's guest on the set of a zombie movie. I was an actor and he was a producer. And something just clicked and we became best friends almost immediately. It was like love at first sight. I really do love this guy to death. He's like my brother that I picked. How often do you get to do that? Pick somebody who means as much to you as biological family. Ladies and gentlemen, on the show today I've got Tim Rooney. And you may remember him from all the way back in episode 2, where we talked about fast food addiction. But it's pretty interesting the way a human being can have one journey of self-improvement, and it leads you down a rabbit hole towards something you weren't expecting. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing where Tim landed at the end of a really wild story. And it's all over the place, honestly, because Tim is all over the place as a human being. He's as scatterbrained as I am right now, and he's not whacked out of his gourd on medicine. At least, you know, not so far as I know. You holding out on me, buddy? But, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that I heard the other day that I really enjoyed. I was in Boston. I didn't take a lot of photos. I didn't really feel the need to. I was experiencing a bunch of stuff, and I realized I'm no longer really in the business of cataloging where I've been and what I've done for the sake of other people. I take photos of things I want to remember, but I don't feel like I have to take pictures of absolutely everything I see that's beautiful. Because, quite frankly, most of the time, it doesn't translate. And the other part of the time, what is the point? I'm never going to look at these pictures again. I'm not going to look back at them. Why am I taking pictures of plaques that I'm not bothering to read? Am I going to read it later through the photo? Give me a break. What am I doing? The thing I heard the other day that kind of drove all that home was there is no test. There's not going to be a test later asking you, what did you see? What do you remember about it? What did you memorize? That's it. It's just experiences. So experience them. Why not? None of this is new. This is all something that people have been figuring out long before I did. But, you know, I tend to be a little late to the game on a lot of things. You know, I spent a lot of years struggling with my mental illness and waiting for the answers without realizing I had the answers. I had to figure out, how am I going to learn how to live with myself? How am I going to learn how to fix all the weird wiring? And I'll tell you what, I'm definitely not going to fix it with this cocktail of medicine because it is making me feel really goofy. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. Does any of this make sense? I'm putting this together as a professional for people to listen to, and I don't know what I'm talking about. But you know who does? Today's guest, Tim Rooney. Now, Tim is actually going to be launching his very own podcast called Let's Laugh About Death. It's a show that celebrates life while contemplating the inevitable. Because he's got some very personal experience with death all throughout his life, and the ways that it has shaped him is pretty interesting. And to come to that late in life and start making changes and becoming a more well-rounded person, understanding why you do the weird shit that you do, is something that not everybody does. And I think it's fascinating what he's doing. At the end of the show, there's actually even going to be a slight little preview of the show and the theme song. So enjoy it. And let's talk to Tim Rooney. Water.
Ah, yes, water.
Not coffee. Water over suicide. Suicide in water.
Well, that's a place to start. I gotta say, I've been feeling really weird lately, and I think that part of it is due to the fact that the weather's been so strange.
Yeah.
For the season, how's that affected you?
Honestly, there have been a few days where I've gotten, I don't want to say down, but I know that at least it seems like my firewall, speaking in geek term, is down in terms of like my ability to just let stuff slide. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, it'll set me into a spiral and then I'll just be like, you know, fuck the world, fuck everybody, fuck, you know, whatever. So it feels nice to be able to talk this time about, as opposed to my addiction to food. You know, now I get to talk about how the world sucks and everybody in it does. You know, so that's kind of neat. No, yeah. But actually, you know, it's not even that I think the whole world sucks. I genuinely want to do stuff to help people. And, excuse me. You know, I genuinely want to do stuff to help people if I can, you know, because I realize that success and all that kind of stuff is not about me. It's about genuinely helping others. But I sit there and sometimes get so frustrated with humanity and people in general that it's like, you know what? I have to just kind of justify it where it's like, okay, I'm a zoologist and I'm studying these, you know, chimps.
Yeah.
And they keep throwing their shit in my face, you know, and I have to just go, well, that's what they do, you know, instead of getting mad about it. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's definitely something to that. But instead of looking at them as chimps, why not just look at them as you?
As me?
Yeah.
I guess I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean, if you think about them as chimps throwing their shit at you,
yeah,
you're otherizing. If you look at them as yourself, you know what? They're just people just like me.
Yeah, no, and I do, yeah. I do that. In fact, there are other things that I do that with. Like when I see somebody getting belittled, that bothers me.
Yeah.
You know, so I will step in and I will not belittle them back, but I'll make them look kind of dumb. Because I think, yes, people are people. Nobody's better than anybody else. That's kind of how, yeah, I was raised, is it's like nobody is better than anybody else. You know, from the example I was taught growing up was, you know, from the guy who owns the horse through the jockey to the trainer to the guy who shovels the shit to the stable, you know, person, all that kind of stuff. Any one of those people in that chain, if they're gone, it all falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, if your employees in your company are treated like garbage, you're not going to be successful, or at least unless you've got such a high turnover that it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't expect to be treated like, you know, a star employee when I'm working at Burger King, you know, but it's like, because I've done that job, you know, yeah, and it's a turnover job. It's one of those jobs that people just kind of come and go through, you know, and they know that, so they can treat their people kind of shitty.
Well, but you mentioned how you were raised. Where did you grow up at?
I grew up until I was about 12, 13, I grew up in the Chicago area. For anybody who's familiar with the area, it's actually called Arlington Heights. To people who aren't from Chicago, I say Chicago area or Chicago. To people who are from Chicago, they're like, yeah, you're not from Chicago. So Arlington Heights is where I'm from. It's about 20 miles north of Chicago, just shy of the the Wisconsin border. And then I moved. That's, you know what? I was listening to your episode that came out today, there was a statement that you have said a couple times before. It's not if your parents are going to fuck you up, it's when or how.
Yeah, yeah.
And so here's one of those little stories. So my dad died when I was 11, and my mom got life insurance money, and my grandparents died shortly after that. My grandma had died, you know, a few years before, but my grandfather died when I was up in Michigan. I'm thinking I'm in Michigan. When I was up in Michigan for the summer visiting. So let's backtrack. Dad dies. That following summer, my mom drops me off with my aunt in Michigan. And of course, you know, I got a cousin's boyfriend who ridiculed me because, you know, here I am, a city boy kind of thing, and didn't want to do the fishing and the hunting and the blah, 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 whatever kind of shit. And I'm like, my dad just died, asshole. So then I go up there, and after the end of the summer, my grandpa dies. So then the plans get in motion for my mom to buy their house. But then after that summer, I come home. I spent the entire summer up there. It was miserable. It was hell. I get home, go through 7/8 of my 7th grade year, and then we take this cross-country trip we end up in Tijuana, we end up in San Jose, we go all the way up to, and I got pawned off with another relative in Santa Cruz. So I got pawned off a lot when I was
growing up.
Well,
and how many of you were there? Because I know you got brothers and sisters.
Yes, there were 7 of us, but there was a big, and when I say were, I mean literally that I had one just die this last summer, the second youngest. But the difference between me and him was about 7 years. So the age difference between me and the oldest was 14 years. And so my mom had a whole bunch of them, like 6, by the time she was like 28. And I think she kind of had like a nervous meltdown or whatever. And they put her on like birth control. And of course, my family was, you know, diehard Catholic. So my dad was all, oh, you can't do that, you know. And so he stopped going to church and all that because, you know, that would make things better. And so he they stopped, you know, she was on birth control for 6.5, 7 years, or I guess 6.5 years, because then they took her off because they're like, oh, it's causing some problems. They went in, and they were actually going to do a hysterectomy, and then they found me. So, yeah, it was a close call. But all these times I was getting pawned off on my own. You know, it wasn't like me and my brother. You know, there was one time when I was real little, I was like 3 or so, and we went up to Michigan when I was real little. But, you know, I started thinking about that. I'm like, God, I was pawned off a lot of times, you know, so I'm sure that probably gave me some kind of like, not emotional scars, but definitely some worthiness issues, you know? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's emotional scarring.
Oh yeah, totally. You know, cause it's like, why can't I stay here with my friends? And so of course, all I thought was, oh, I'm in the way. Well, hell, let's backtrack. 5 years old, I break my arm and I come home and eat an entire meal. You know, with the family, you know, I don't know if I talked about that before, but it's just stuff like that, you know. And then, of course, I'm sitting there saying my hand broke, and everybody's just laughing because, you know, they were laughing at the fact that the reason why I broke my arm is because I was picking juicy fruit out of the tree, because there was a commercial at the time where someone was doing that.
Right. I had to get stitches in my head because I got excited that Fraggle Rock was coming on, and I jumped up in the air excitedly. And got a cupboard right in the skull.
Ooh.
So, you know, I'm just bleeding all over. I was actually knocked unconscious because I jumped so hard.
Oh, jeez.
I was so excited about fucking Muppets. My sister's freaking out. You know, I'm just bleeding in her arms in the front yard. Stitches. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's kids do dumb shit. That's how kids get hurt.
And Christopher's last words were, down at Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you know, Boober was my jam because he was really down at Fraggle Rock.
With Fraggle Rock. Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, but...
But growing up with those siblings all so much older than you, most of them were probably out of the house by the time you were, you know, becoming a human being.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, when you come online, so to speak, when I was about 4, I mean, I have early memories. I discussed that before, and we won't go into those details. But of the memories that are more consistent, you know, most people usually come around 4 or 5 years old or so. And yeah, my oldest brother was out of the house, and then the rest of them were getting close or going to college or whatever. By the time I was 9, 8, 9 years old, they were off at college, they were getting married, they were, you know, those kinds of things. So yeah, in many ways, it's kind of interesting, because in many ways I can relate to people who have multiple siblings, but I can also relate to only children.
Yes.
You know, so a lot of my friends, in fact, were only childs. So
yeah, but the difference between an only child and a really late child is that an only child
was wanted.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah,
but
that's true. You're right. Sometimes they are oops kids. A lot of times,
but it is the parents' first go round.
Yeah,
So they're figuring things out.
Totally,
they're fresh. They're wide awake. They're concerned. Not necessarily by the time 7 rolls around.
Oh, yeah,
around.
7 comes around, something happens, they got 6 more to
They're
replace
already
it, you know?
Tired.
Yeah, totally, totally. And that's, you know, and there was a lot of that. In fact, I owe a lot of my upbringing to my sister. My oldest sister was kind of a second mother, if you will. She was the one that spoiled me. When she got the job in high school, because somehow in the 70s, she got a job making like something like $12 an hour or something crazy back then. And yeah, it was insane.
Wow.
And no, you know, needless to say, Memco went out of business. But she would buy me whatever I wanted, you know.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much a spoiled brat, you know. I was the one who could get away with everything because the other kids were very well disciplined. I was the one who was able to, you know, give my dad a raspberry and not get backhanded, you know. And of course, there was a little bit of resentment, so I'm sure that had something to play with it, you know.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, it was interesting. So,
well, I mean, that's going to do something to your psyche. I mean, if you don't think it will, I mean, you got another thing coming.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know,
and it's probably coming at you, you know, from behind.
Yeah,
like
totally.
A bullet.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, that you just made me think about something about my psyche is it's like, yeah, I have a real issue with authority. Not like, you know, fuck everybody, yeah, fuck the man, but more like, you know, when I was working at a grocery store, this chain in Michigan, you know how when companies will have like the big wig come in and everybody starts cleaning everything. It's like, oh yeah, because this is what it looks like all the time. Let them see what it looks like all the time. Don't sit there and clean and kiss ass and everybody wears their best uniforms and all that. So we had this thing called the blank name card. It was the name of the company. Fuck it. Meyer One card is what it was called.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a thing that was substituted as a piece of, you know, identification. So if you had one of these, it was as good as having your license or whatever. And so the guy, Fred Meyer, was the head honcho. He was the son of the guy who started the company. So he was the, you know, de facto CEO and everything. And he comes through and everybody's acting like the Pope's coming through, you know. So they're all like kissing his ass and everybody's, you know, damn near bowing down to him. And they walk into the cafeteria and here I am, an 18-year-old kid, and I'm standing behind the counter. And the store general manager and Fred Meyer walk in. And Fred Meyer is going to buy, you know, this guy his lunch. And of course, he's beaming. He's like, oh my God, Fred Meyer's buying my lunch. And I'm like, and it was with a check. Excuse me. And so he goes to hand me the check. And instead of just cashing it, I go, do you have a Meyer One card or perhaps some other form of identification? He lost it. The general manager, I swear I almost got fired. And I'm like, fire me for what? For following store policy?
Yeah.
So it was like, the Fred Meyer guy, he thought it was hilarious. But yeah, the store manager, Jim, he wasn't too happy about that. So I was kind of on a shit list for a little while there. But hey, that's the kind of authoritative, you know, rejection that I have, you know.
Yeah, but there, you know, one of the things that I find about that, and this is one of the things that I'm not even really sure what the psychological reason for this is, but there is a tendency amongst a certain type of person who's kind of anti-authority,
mm-hmm.
also is a real stickler for the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could be that way.
Yeah.
I definitely could be that way.
I have that too. I have that same thing, you know, it until, you know, eventually I don't know. A lot of it just seems to go away after a while, but I definitely had that for a while. But I think it comes from that same place that the worthiness comes from.
Yeah.
Because it's all tied in with all of your other shit, and especially fairness. And so,
true,
you know,
yeah, absolutely,
you have disdain for authority, but God damn it. Everybody's going to follow the same fucking rules.
Yes. Yeah, because it that's the thing, is at least with rules, there's a concrete equalizer, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the judicial system, I think, in this country is just fucked, and I can give several reasons for that.
For sure.
Personal reasons. And, I mean, we know that, you know? It's privatized prisons, et cetera, the list can go on. But you'll see a case where one person and another person will do the exact same crime. And, it was their first offense. I'm sorry, there are certain things that are not a first offense. Yeah. You know? I personally know someone who essentially had the same thing happen. They just happened to be female. And they essentially were raped, but the person happened to be underage. That person went to prison for 4 years. There was another case recently where a bus driver, a person of authority, raped a 14-year-old girl and got like 30 days or something, or probation, or some nonsensical bullshit slap on the wrist. Yeah. You know? That's where rules come into place. It's like, personally, I think it should be almost a point system. If they can do that with licenses, why not do it with, you know, your time? But, of course, then there has to be due process, and there has to be all those kinds of things, so it's a gray area still.
Yeah.
But, you know, perfect example of the rules thing, though, is I ride the bus every day. And so this is an example of why I will use rules to be like, wait a second here. So you have to wear a seatbelt. You have to wear a seatbelt, and if you don't, you'll get a ticket. It should be my choice. Yes, I'm taking my... What is it going to change? If I rear-end somebody and I go flying through the windshield, or I rear-end somebody and I don't go flying through the windshield, the damage is done. The only person it's going to affect is me. But yet I ride on a bus, and there are 215 sardines riding on this thing at 70 miles an hour, and I'm sorry, there's nothing stopping us. If all of a sudden we were to rear-end a semi-truck, it's going to be a freaking meatpacking, you know, it'll be disgusting. Everybody will be slopped all over the place and everything, but we don't have to wear seatbelts there. People can stand in the aisle, you know. This is where it's like, that's the kind of rules that drive me nuts. It's like, well, why does it apply here and it doesn't apply here?
Well, and that kind of thought process, to have that internal wiring to be, upset about whether or not something is functioning at that level of fairness. That's a pretty universal thing for most people.
But absolutely.
I think there's a specific level that, you know, people like us sometimes can get in us, because it all comes back to that level of inferiority and still looking for areas where we are being treated as equals.
Yes, yes.
And just looking for those areas.
Absolutely. And when you can, it's a level the playing field kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly it. It's like, you know, and I think that comes from, being somebody who has always had some kind of self-esteem issue.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's a larger thing that speaks to a lot of other things about, personalities. How were your relationships otherwise with other people?
Oh, with other people, they were fine. Back in Illinois, I was the leader of my gang, so to speak. In fact,
right.
We even had a gang name. We were going to have a rival fight. It was like the Jets and the Sharks kind of thing, you know, without the dancing. But we were called the Green Dragons because we saw some movie about, you know, gangs or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
And, there were like six of us, and I was clearly the leader, you know. I was the Kirk, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
And we never did anything. We just go and play in some trees and stuff, you know, do just dumb shit.
Sure.
But
you're kids.
Yeah, we were kids. But it was like, if it was Stand By Me, you know.
Yeah.
I would be the, what's his name? Wesley. From Star Trek. I'd be that character at least.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was more likely to be the kid who was River Phoenix. You know? I was that type of character. Then.
Yeah.
When I came to... So, when it came to certain things, I had all the confidence in the world. You know? I was very entrepreneurial. My friend Tibor was his name. He and I would make little stuff in our yard, and one time I actually got kids to come... This was also kind of a, now that I think about it, this was probably about fourth grade, and it was one of those instances that made me go, God, I'm a fuck up. So I made this, we called it a carnival. So, like, all the little, you know, little cheesy carnival games?
Yeah,
the one
yeah.
in the rides. It was just the cheesy games.
Right.
Tibor had, like, three of those little fake floating ducks, and it was like, oh, the duck game. And there were three of them. It was like, okay, you knew which color was what. You'd grab, oh, there's the one. Oh, wow, I'm going to grab it. Oh, wait, there's the one again, you know? So, we had all of our leftover crap. We put it out as prizes, and we did all this. And nobody came. But then I went to school, and I started telling some kids, and I was like, yeah, you should check it out. It's really neat. It's really neat. And I would have been a hell of a salesman, you know? I got like two or three kids that showed up. The problem was, is I wasn't there. I assumed they wouldn't even show up, or I forgot about it or whatever. And all of a sudden I come home and my mom's like, yeah, you had a couple kids stop by. And I'm like, what? Yeah, they wanted to check out that thing you made. I was like, what? Oh, shit. So Monday, I was dreading Monday morning. Monday yeah. morning, it was like, you know, it was like telling someone I got a lemonade stand and then them, you know, having a line around the block. And,
you don't have a lemonade stand, liar.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know.
So, but if you think about it, I mean, you know, looking at everything else, I mean, it makes total sense. If no one's giving you direct information, you're gonna make your own.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know? Absolutely. And I filled
and
in the blanks.
You're not reliable.
No, you're right. And that's exactly it. I mean, you're your own worst critic.
Yes.
So when you're doing that stuff by the age of, you know, 10, 12, 13 years old or so, it's going to stick with you
yeah.
because that becomes normal.
Yeah.
That's just a norm. Oh, okay, I'm unworthy of any kind of, you know, not to mention throw in a little taste of, you know, Irish Catholic, and therefore it was like, oh, you don't touch anybody, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so there,
you know, unless they're an altar boy.
Yes, exactly, yeah. You know, which but I was a little bit bummed about
priest?
That. No, but I was an altar boy, and I was actually a little offended because the priest that I was an altar boy with never hit on me once. But he got accused.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I felt a little offended. So talk about some
way to take that joke no. and really drive it into the ground.
Into the ground. Yeah. No, but seriously, though, it did happen, but it was like 10 or 15 years beforehand.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
apparently when they brought him up on charges, he was already long gone. So.
Yeah.
But, and it was that was another like shocking thing.
That is
thing.
A
I'm
big
like,
deal. I mean, that's
a huge deal. You know, this is a guy that did my first communion. This was a guy that did my dad's funeral. Mm-hmm. This was a guy that did my, you know, did he do my brother's wedding? I mean, it was like he was a part of our lives.
Yeah.
When my dad died, he came over. And then 20 some years later, I found out they actually were looking at charging him. And then
yeah.
he like pretty much had retired at that point. I'm like, just wow. You know?
So even in talking about your dad's funeral, I mean, mm-hmm. you said you were 11 years old?
11, yeah. I just turned 11.
So, I mean, what is that like?
Well, I will say this. There is something, and it's going to sound like I've built my own superstition out of this. So check this out. We went to a friend's house, and a friend of his, who my dad, to give everybody a little quick backstory, my dad was one of these guys who was... He was brilliant. There was just no other word for it. He worked for NASA, helping with the shielding for the Apollo missions and all that. And then he got into nuclear shielding. So he was literally a rocket scientist and a nuclear physicist. The guy was, you know, off the chart smart, but he couldn't hammer in a nail to save his life. You know, he was one of those
yeah.
guys that was all left side brain. But he had, you know, he had a sense of humor and everything. So we went to an old friend of his who had traveled with him through different jobs. You know, it was like his right-hand man kind of thing. And we went to visit him. He had followed him from Pennsylvania to California to Chicago area. So we went to Bob was his name. We went to Bob's house, and it was for Thanksgiving. And my dad drove, and I only learned this recently, but my dad drove, and the movie The Day After was on. So it might not have been Thanksgiving. It might have been some other. Maybe it was Easter. I don't know whenever that aired. I just remember distinctly the movie The Day After was on. Well, The Day After is when he essentially died. He was in a coma for like 3 days, but he kind of just lingered for like 3 days or so. But when he had the thing happen, so to this day, I own the movie The Day After. I found it, and I don't have the balls to watch it because I'm like, Jesus Christ, he was 50 when he died. I'm 46. What if
yeah.
there's some kind of like cosmic, you know,
like the ring?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I've got this like little weird subconscious, and I know it's crazy. I know it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's also innate in us. I mean, do you cover your crotch when you're walking in the dark?
No.
Well,
why?
I mean, I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because of something like a dog head hitting you in the nuts?
No,
or something like that?
You're just afraid you're going to hit yourself on something.
Oh, no. I don't. No, That's
okay. Maybe I'm weird.
You are. Well, I know that, but
maybe I just like touching myself in the dark.
Well, I do that, but no. It's just it's one of those things where did you ever accidentally walk into a bedpost or something?
Yeah.
You go. So you build that, and then all of a sudden, and you could say, I mean, in your case, it's more of a learning experience. It's like, you know, wear knee pads because you tore your knees up skateboarding or whatever. You know, you wouldn't, and I know my wife wouldn't. You guys both were rebels, but. I would have been like, I'm putting on the knee pads because that hurt. My dad thing though, like I said, it's the best way I can describe it is a superstition. There's no logical reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, but like you said, it's like the ring. Yeah. That's how my brain, I'd never even put the association together, but it was like, yeah, I watch this movie and the next day I'm going to die.
Yeah.
You know, even though he didn't even watch it, it was just on, you know, but, yeah, so he dies, and oddly enough, my brother flew in from, he was in the military, and, you know, everybody was there. We all, at one point, we all were hanging around his bedside, and I remember basically being there for about a half hour or so, and then, okay, well, you know, because back then, it was weird. Kids weren't really allowed in hospitals, you know?
Right, yeah.
So they brought me out, and I went and stayed with some family friends that lived down the street. And I remember them telling me, oh, it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine. And I genuinely thought, oh, it's going to be fine. And because my dad was in and out of the hospital all the time, he had tons of, you know, he literally had like a dozen heart attacks, and he brain surgery, open heart surgery, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, that's just the routine.
So that was just your normal.
That was my
Dad's
normal.
Dad's in the hospital.
Totally. And that brings up another thing that really used to piss me off. Speaking of fair and rules and things like that, I remember getting really mad when I would see all the neighbors come out and gawk whenever my dad would go off into the ambulance, you know, and it'd be like, you getting a good show, huh? You know, it's like, you fucking assholes. You know, I felt like a New Yorker for that little bit time there where it was like, get the fuck back in your house, you know? And yeah. It used to really piss me off. But anyway, so he's in the hospital, and I found this out years later, too. I always heard this, like, family myth that my mom was like, you know, Kevin, we'll be fine. Go ahead and go. We'll be okay. Just go. And like a half hour later, he was dead. My sister said no. Three breaths later, he was dead. And that really kind of was like, holy shit, that ties into, you know, I'll plug it, my podcast, Let's Laugh About Death, you know? That's kind of one of the things that ties into that, is I've been fascinated with death forever. But, yeah, one of the things that really bothers me about his death was, I remember my friend Brianna getting mad at me because she felt mortified and devastated for me, and 2 days later, I'm out riding my bike.
Yeah.
Smiling, laughing with the kids, you know, with the other kids in the neighborhood. And she was all like, she was almost mad at me. She was like, you know, I felt bad for you and you were doing that. And I was like, fuck you. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. But in the same sense, that was how I processed it.
Yeah.
It really didn't hit me until probably, 20 years later.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, one day out of left field, I just was on the floor bawling my eyes out. It was like I finally made, you know, the connection that, wow, my dad's dead. Because he'd been gone longer than he was alive in my life.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, how much did that really affect me? You know? How much did you know, 11-year-old kid who was already kind of awkward, who was the youngest of seven, who was, you know, I wish I would give anything to be able to have an adult conversation with him.
Yeah.
You know? That's something that I feel like I was cheated out of.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because, it's a matter of, you know, if you had had your father, I mean, everything would have worked out so much differently for you.
Yeah,
it would have, but I mean, he still would have fucked you up. You still would have a weird relationship. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You'd have the same strange, fucked up relationship a lot of men have with their
absolutely,
fathers.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and my older siblings who are, were adults when he died, you know, let me think here. Kev would have been 25, you know?
Yeah.
That's my oldest brother. And so the rest of them were, it was nuts. It was
right.
Like 25.
So they had a whole life
with him.
And what are the differences that you can even point at between, let's say, the way that you seem to, let's say, experience the world versus the way they experience the world? Do you see a difference?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were, you know, there was a long time where I, going up to Michigan, was just pretty much like, oh, you're that now. You're no longer Chicago. Now you're Podunk. you know? And so they would come and visit once in a blue moon, but it was like, oh, God, we're going to Mayberry. Great. You know, that kind of thing. And admittedly, it was. I lived in this town called Zilwaukee, which had like 2,000 people. It was right outside the metropolis of Saginaw that had 50,000 people, you know? And it was just, it was one of those things where, believe me, when I first got there, I was like, I'm thinking, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
Because you know, I was used to living in an area similar to where I live now outside of Denver. It was very much that kind of a thing, you know?
It's exactly like all of the beginnings of the teen 80s movies, except for you're not a rad BMX biker who's going to show everybody what you can do.
Yes, exactly.
You came from a big city, and that's it.
And that's it, yeah. There was nothing. It was like, yeah, I could play ping pong, you know?
But yeah, but so can people in prisons and yes, halfway houses.
Totally, totally.
That's where I learned it. I mean, I went to a school for degenerates, and I learned how to play ping pong.
You learned how to play ping pong, yeah.
You know, cards and all that.
All that stuff.
That's how I know anything, is because I went to one of those schools.
Yeah, but that some people would be like, oh, it's one of those schools. It's like, yeah, but you know what? You probably learned a hell of a lot more in that kind of school than you would just memorizing shit out of a book.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I gained a little bit of self-worth, weirdly.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you did.
Because they know how to talk to damaged people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't damaged the same way they were.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, but it was interesting. It was interesting to get that level of understanding from people who are used to dealing with, you know, criminals and just trying to keep people out of jail.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm there just because I'm, you know, sad and weird.
Well, and
they're like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly. But it probably felt nice to go to a school where you were talked to like an adult.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing I've never done is talk down to my son. You know, I don't mean like talk down like you're a fucking idiot, but I mean like, you know, are you good day at school? You know, it's always been like, hey, do you have a good day? When he's 1 year old, I'm like, you need your diaper changed? You know, it's like, okay, well, mom will be home soon.
Watch, you're going to... And this is how your kid's going to get fucked up.
Yes. Like, oh, yeah. No, but seriously, I did change his diapers. I did feed him. I did do that kind of stuff. You know, and it was one of those things where, I never talked down to them. I always talked to kids like adults, you know?
Kids like it.
They do. It makes them feel like people.
Because you can talk to a kid like an adult, you know, without being cold.
Yes, absolutely.
You know? It's not about being cold. It's about just, you know, all right, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to show you respect, until you don't deserve it.
You got it.
Some kids are not great.
Oh, dude, I substitute taught for like 2 weeks, and there was a school that was just monsters. The one class. It was a third grade class, and they ate me alive.
I did some teacher's aid stuff for a while in my last couple of years of high school, where I would go, and it was like some kind of like public service credit or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was doing aid in like inner city schools, in the like kindergarten and third grade and like, you know, lower levels, like middle school kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And man, it was surprising how many of those children seem like, oh, you're going to be a problem someday.
Yeah, yeah.
And this school is just failing you.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is that's exactly. A lot of schools, they just, you know, and I think in defense of the teachers, I mean, there's only so much you can do.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why that school you went to wasn't working, and you went to another one that was.
Yeah.
You know, at least they recognize that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you'd have just kept getting pushed through whatever school you were going through and it wasn't working for you, chances are you would have dropped out, not been able to find a job, and then who knows what.
Well, you know. And how far can you coast on charm?
Yeah,
pretty
exactly.
Pretty far, actually.
Well, I mean, hell.
And then you find yourself in a hole.
Exactly. You know?
But about your situation, I mean, you get yourself together. You essentially get raised by your sister. I mean, what is your mom like after your dad goes?
She kind of... I don't want to say she checked out, but she, for lack of a better word, kind of checked out for a little while there.
Yeah. I mean, her partner's gone.
Yeah, her partner, they were married 25 years,
yeah.
You know? And, you know, and that's the weird thing is it's like now that I'm pushing 50, I used to hear when I was a kid, oh, that's so young. And I'm like, 50? that's an old man. It's yeah. like now I'm like, yeah, that is young. I got friends way older than that now, you know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, 25 years, that's an accomplishment, you know? That's rare, you know, in a lot of cases to stick together that long.
Totally.
And, you know, to have him just go like that and, you know, and there was a lot of other, getting back to the authority, you know, the problems with authority and all that and fairness and everything, there were some issues with the Social Security. That was the problem is my mom, not only did she just lose her partner, but she had bullshit, unnecessary bullshit hit her from Social Security, from his life insurance, from, you know, from all kinds of, he was 10 weeks away from his pension. And they were fighting to get it. Actually, basically, long story short, they didn't give it to him. 10 weeks away. Didn't matter that he worked all the overtime and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, it was just that kind of nonsense. So she had a lot of stress on her. Fortunately, she had, and I have the utmost respect for her in a sense that she had the foresight to know he's going soon. And so she got her degree as an RN. And so she worked third shift a lot. After she got her RN, she was, you know, new kid on the block, she got all the third shift, you know, shifts.
You're gonna work those weird hours because that's when people are getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Although she was actually probably the best kind of nurse. She worked in the nursery. She didn't work in the neonatal where the kids were born with, like, you know, their heads inside out and all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff that would happen. Because believe me, she told me some stories of friends of hers who were nurses in those things, like where, you know, kids born with the heart outside their body. And you know,
just
we're very fortunate about that. That's one thing I've learned is to take, and just recently, is to have gratitude for things that I have, you know. Yeah. My son, he's got Asperger's, but all he has is Asperger's.
Yeah.
He can see, he can, you know, he can hear, he can speak, he can move, you know, those kinds of things. So it's like you take that into consideration and you go, wow, things could be a lot worse, you know. Yeah. And his Asperger's, you wouldn't even know he's got it, you know. You know, it's like with my mom, though, back to my mom, she didn't really show up for, in fact, with him being sick, that's probably a large reason why, you know, whenever I had musicals, you know, the little flutophones is what they called them, but some people call them recorders. Technically, they are something different. I looked that up one day. They look virtually identical, but a flutophone is something
else. Yeah, but they both sound like, you know, the just death.
Yes, no, absolutely. They kill childhoods.
Yeah.
Yeah. She never showed up to anything. He never showed up literally one time because he couldn't, you know. Yeah. But she wouldn't show up to anything. So, you know, I was on the volleyball team because that was, you know, I wasn't tall enough for basketball, and I, you know, we didn't have football at my school, and I'm not an athletic person, but I was popular. Like I said, when I moved to Michigan, I was popular at my school. And they're like, yeah, join, and I actually had fun. But I think she came to one game, you know, probably because she was sleeping all the time or whatever, you know. Yeah. But I didn't get that as a kid. It was like, oh, mom hasn't shown up to another thing. Oh, right. I've got this musical, you know, those cheesy spring musicals and stuff.
Of course.
She didn't show up to that, you know, and it was just like, Jesus, you know.
But so you couple that with all of the everything else. I mean, if you take a look backward, I mean, it's almost like this is a recipe for how to make someone have some very serious issues about their identity, their place in the world,
yes.
How well, you know, the fact that, you know, you felt like you were unworthy of love.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, this is shit that you're just now starting to figure out that is wired in you. And you're like, all right, where do I start?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I've got the Encyclopedia Britannica of issues, you know, in a sense.
Yeah.
I don't have that many issues, but figuratively speaking, but it's like okay, now pick a page.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I don't know where to begin.
Right.
But in the same sense, at least I'm aware that they're there now.
Yeah. Well, you know? And that's where you begin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's precisely where you begin. You just you attempt to start making yourself better today than you were yesterday.
Yeah.
And to forgive yourself on days when you just can't handle that.
Yeah. That's, you know, and that's the thing is it's like, I was
acceptance
thinking about,
and forgiveness are the two most difficult things for a human being to grasp and really embody.
Yeah. You're totally right.
I mean, I don't get that right all the time either. And, you know, I like to think that I found myself fairly enlightened after, you know, just years and years of trying and trying and trying. But, you know, I still have days
where I'm like,
fuck these people.
Yeah, yeah. And that's...
We all have that.
Yes.
And to be able to forgive yourself is way harder than learning to forgive other people.
Absolutely. I am always able to turn the other cheek, so to speak, you know, way quicker than I would on my own shit that I messed up on. I still get mad at myself for shit I did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, why the fuck would I do that? You know, and it's just like, yeah, you know. And, but it's just one of those things, you know. And yeah, I think, again, we are our own worst enemy, which is unfortunate because we should be the person we love the most without being egotistical.
No, of course.
You know, that should be our primary goal.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to be able to love yourself.
Yeah.
You have to be able to look in the mirror and say, this person is worthwhile.
Totally.
And if you do look in the mirror and you think this person is not worthwhile, you have work to do.
Yes.
Because
yes.
You could be.
I could be, yeah. Well, and I shouldn't say that I think that I've never thought that this person wasn't worthwhile, but I've started this habit. I took this course a year or so ago, and I started this habit of every night I look in the mirror and I go, okay, these are what I'm going to do. This is the steps I'm going. This is where I'm heading and all that. And basically it's like I'm talking to me. Because if you could pull yourself out of it and look at yourself in the mirror as if it's someone else talking to you.
Yeah.
You can kind of get that separation, even though you're staring yourself right in the eyes. You can get that separation where you can be like, no, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know, you're worthy. I've even fist bumped myself a few times, you know, just to get myself there. And it's like, do I love myself? Yeah, I guess I love myself in the way that, you know, you love your dog or whatever kind of stuff. But do I love myself to the level I should? No. I like myself. I like myself a lot versus what I used to, but I'm still not at that level, you know, but I'm getting there. And it's the Kaizen approach. That's my new philosophy is a Kaizen approach. Kaizen is more of related to business. It's a Japanese approach of, you know, essentially daily steps to improvement. You know, you crawl, you walk, you run, you sprint, you're full on, you know, just marathoning. And it's from a corporate standpoint where each of the employees, you know, improvement every day. And that's where I'm kind of getting at. It's like, you know, don't beat yourself up if you, well, tonight I was on a diet and what did I have? I had a couple burgers. Fuck it. Don't beat myself up. Pick myself up. I tripped. I was walking. I tripped. Get back up and keep going. But you know what? I made a conscious effort of it and I knew it. I didn't cave. I was like, you know what? I'm going to treat myself. It's the way you look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it wasn't a case of, ah, fuck, I gave in now. Well, fuck it all. I'm going to Burger King on the way home, you know?
Right. Yeah. You can make concessions without throwing everything away.
Without throwing it out. And I have learned, you know, a lot of times people like to do, well, on my such and such birthday or on Monday I'm starting or on blah, blah. And we all do that.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Time is irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know? It is irrelevant. It is meaningless. You know, and that's something for a whole nother discussion.
Well, and in going through all of the everything that we've been talking about, I mean, you talk about time being completely irrelevant, and the journey that you've had as a human being with the time that you've had and what you've done with it, and the fact that you've ended up where you are now, doing as well as you are now, who's to say that it wouldn't have been worse in another situation?
Oh yeah.
Who's to say you'd even be alive today?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, your parents could have loved you to death. Your father never died, and then, you know, boom, you get hit with the suicide gene.
Yeah,
and you just say, "Fuck it, I'm out." I mean, it has nothing to do with
or
that.
Shit. Boom, I get hit by a car.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the reason why I say time is irrelevant. Is that whole thing of, you know, you hear. The problem is a lot of times we see these things on Facebook that seem corny and all that, and it's like, no, in reality, they're true. The whole, you know, tell your significant other, tell your kids, tell your friends, whatever, you love them, because you never know when it's going to be your last time.
Yeah.
You never know when you're going to check out
and
without
plus,
even realizing.
It's just something you should do anyway.
Absolutely.
Be present. Be here.
Yes.
And, you know, when you love someone, tell them.
Chris, I love you, dude.
And
I'm
love
dead
you
serious.
Too.
Absolutely. You know? And now you know this. And I'm out. I'm going to go, you know, get hit by a car now. See? It's like The Ring, man.
Don't watch that movie.
No, but I'm dead serious.
I don't need
Chris.
The ratings that bad.
Wow, you got 18 million listens. The thing is that I've known Chris forever. And Chris, in many regards has, you know, I know I'm breaking a fourth wall thing, whatever here, but he is, he has been like a brother to me, closer than most of my brothers, you know? Yeah, so when I say that, I genuinely mean it. So, yeah. You know, but again, it's important to say that kind of stuff.
It is.
So I tell my wife I love her all the time. I tell my son I love him all the time. You know, getting better.
Your wife I love her all the time.
You tell your son that too? I mean, my son. Wait. Hey. No, but.
Well, I mean, tell me a little bit about this. I mean, as we've. So, I mean, as we're kind of winding down here, we've run the gamut on so many different things.
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
We've gone all over the place, but there has been sort of a through line of questioning and curiosity and mysteries and not knowing,
mm-hmm.
and having something in yourself where you seem to spend a lot of time in your life being uncertain.
Yes.
Of what's coming next, what's happening now, where am I going, and then just being expected to roll with it. But you're taking all of that, and you're turning that into something to your advantage now.
Yeah, yeah.
By running this podcast that you're doing now, the Let's Laugh About Death.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's if there's
so explain a little bit about like what is the show? Like what's the gist of why that appealed to you?
Well, like I said, I've been fascinated with death since I've been little, even since before my dad's death. You know, my grandparents died when I was littler. You know, younger than 11. A couple of them did at least. And one was dead before I was even born. So death was always something that I was at least conscious of. I was one of these kids who, like you said, you know, dealing with, how did you put it? Basically, I always wanted a contingency plan and an emergency shelter, if you will, from every possible thing that could happen.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm learning now, you know, bomb shelter, if you will, and that comes into place here because you and I both grew up during the Cold War.
Yeah.
The Russians were going to bomb us any day now.
Yep.
You know, it was always that. And we would listen to, there was this musician named Tom Lehrer, and he always had songs about, you know, like death, and there's one song, We'll All Go Together When We Go, and things like that, and it was like, and I always used to laugh at him, but I always used to be like, geez, that's a real possibility, you know, at least I thought it was, you know, and maybe it was, we all thought it was, you know, but so I was always like, God, this could go at any moment, you know, and I was terrified of it. Well, after, you know, I had some recent deaths, and that kind of like rekindled my whole fascination and interest in everything with death. And plus it was more of a case of, you know, healing with laughter, if you will. You know, I mean, at my dad's funeral, we joked, you know, at my brother's funeral, we joked, at my friend. My friend James, who was like the other brother, you know, I've mentioned him several times in the past, but, he died. And then 2 months later or so, my other friend, Kevin, who was a mutual friend of James. So like two of my closest friends died within a couple months of each other. And then my brother died a month after Kevin or so. And, but we laughed at Kevin's like wake, you know, we literally, everybody wore Hawaiian shirts. It was awesome. You know, that's a good way to handle it. It's healing. Healing. Laughter is the best medicine on so many different levels, you know, grief being one of them. So I thought, basically what the whole concept is that I personally believe something happens when we're gone. You know, I won't get into all the details, but I want to have conversations with different people of different experiences, faiths, things like that. I know a guy who was on the USS Cole that, you know, he saw buddies die right in front of him. I want to get his perspective, you know. That's not something necessary to laugh about, but I'm sure other things that has happened to him, we could, you know, find humor in it. I want to talk to, you know, police who've seen people die, doctors who've seen people die, Buddhist monks, anything and everybody, you know?
Right.
And kind of get their perspective.
Even with that guy, I mean, I'm sure that he's got stories about those people that are lovely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stories about his friends that were wonderful. And then, you know, what do you do? I mean, when you have those stories, you've got all of these moments where you're thinking about someone who's passed, and it's sad,
and it brings
tears to your eyes, and
it can
really affect you. But the other side of that coin is that now you've got these sort of melancholy bits of laughter as well, because you can think back on the things that really mattered while they were alive.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, even sometimes didn't matter. You know, just the little things that were a part of life.
Yes.
Because it is two sides of the same coin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is it's like, you know, you're life and death. Yeah. If that's what you're referring to of the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you can sit there and you can, you know, you can still be mad at that person who died.
Yeah.
You can be happy with that person who died.
Yeah.
You can laugh about the dumb shit. You can pick on them. Yeah. You know, I pick on my friend Kevin all the time. You know, Kevin had this tendency to leave Kevin-sized portions, is what we called them. It was basically like, you know, four Cheerios in a box, and he would seal it back up and put it in the cupboard, because he lived with us for a little while.
Yeah.
So now a normal term, you know, it's like there's mayonnaise, there's ketchup, and there's Kevin-sized Cheerios in the cupboard. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, there's 16 Cheerios. You know, we do that, and I sit there, and sometimes I feel bad about it. I'm like, no, he would love this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the whole point behind the podcast is A, what do you think happens when you die? B, let's celebrate life.
Yeah.
While contemplating the inevitable. That's a tagline of it. You know, it's kind of like, that's exactly it. Celebrate life. Life isn't only about death. Death isn't only about life. You know, death is a transition. Death is, you know, that thing that happens to everybody. So it's the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about.
Right.
You know, and it's a giant elephant.
So why not get some chuckles while we're at
it? Absolutely, you
know. Because it is, I mean, the very idea is, with our humanity and our existence in general, is really ridiculous.
Yes.
And so, of course, the idea of contemplating what's going to happen next, I mean, there's got to be some humor in there.
Absolutely.
It just has to.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an idea for a sketch one time that I thought would be funny, where it's Heaven's Waiting Room, and you've got it's like a picture a line at the DMV, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, one at a time, and it's like, okay, here, check, move on, next one, check, move on, and then all of a sudden the world explodes, and it's just jam-packed with, like, you can't see anything, and they're panicking and everything, you know, it would be funny. Personally, I think what would be comforting, and I think what would be one of the things that would make humanity fear death the least is if we all did go together at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because it would be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's going to happen. You know, there's those movies.
You mean like if we all knew it was coming?
If we all knew it was happening.
Like, you've got an hour.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, it'd be terrifying.
Man, I don't know.
Well, it'd be terrifying, but in the same sense, it'd be kind of like, talk about the great equalizer. Talk about fair. Think about that. Talk about the ultimate and fair. I mean, it's unfair that it's happening, but it's fair because it's happening everybody equal.
What do you do with that last hour?
I don't know. You know, I mean, do you play Fallout? Do you have sex? Yes. What do you do? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Honestly, I know 85% of the planet would probably be praying.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that probably, you know, I picture Independence Day. There's going to be people up on top of the rooftops partying and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's going to be that kind of stuff. And personally, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I probably would start laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, this figures. Yeah. You know, not like, oh, that's my luck. It's like, no, that's everybody's luck.
Yeah.
We're all fucked. You know, and that all comes down to the whole, it's something George Carlin says. It's like, the planet's going to be fine. We're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what if the planet was actually fucked? What if the planet just blew up one day and we knew, oh, yeah, the volcanoes are getting ready. Oh, yeah, we got a powder keg. It's coming any day now, you know, and it was just like, yeah, we've got a countdown, you know.
So as going through these conversations with people, Has that changed your attitude on anything in any way? Like, just about life in general?
Absolutely, yeah. It's just the few conversations I've had so far, people really have slightly different takes on it. And a couple people have even brought up concepts of, you know, everybody thinks death is this finite, final, everybody sees the white light, everybody sees, you know, whatever it happens to be. And I honestly think, personally, I think that... Well, and they had suggested that death is different for everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no kidding. Well, think about that. How many people, you know, the Christians go and they die and they have a near-death experience and they meet Jesus on the other side and they come back and they talk about that. Well, what do Muslims, you know, if they have a near-death experience, they probably see Muhammad or whoever, you know, or, you know, Jews see, I don't know, Uncle Irving, you know, and so you've got, you know, I'm sorry, but I know that they do believe, I thought they believed in, you know, the same kind of heaven, but, you know, you see dead relatives or you see whatever, but you see what you are raised to think. And so, personally, I think that death, there's almost that the religion gives everybody some kind of preview to death. So it's like, okay, Christians are going to see Jesus, and Muslims are going to see Muhammad, and the, you know, the 72 virgins, and you know, Asian religions, you know, some of the Far East religions, you know, they might see, you know, whatever Buddhist beliefs and everything. I'm not, I need to study up on this more. That's why I want to get people on. It's because I want to hear about this stuff, you know, but once you get past that
real
point,
conversations with people,
you absolutely, know, you know,
someone, yeah,
totally. And, but it's like, okay, now that you've gotten past that, Jesus is going to introduce you to what is afterwards.
Yeah.
Muhammad is going to bring you to what is afterwards and all that. And so I think religion conditions the brain to be able to grasp the concept a little bit better.
Yeah.
And that's the perspective I want to see from people, you know? And I've learned, you know, that when people are sitting there saying, maybe it is different for everybody. Well, hell, a heart attack is different for everybody.
Yeah.
Some of the symptoms are the same, but a heart attack is different. Childbirth is different for everybody.
Well, you know, some people taste cilantro as if it is soap.
Yeah.
That is a small thing.
Yes.
We all have different perceptions. Some people need glasses.
Yes.
Some people have hearing loss.
Totally.
Your experience in the world, you have a different body weight, even by kilograms, than any other person that
exists.
Your height, how far apart your eyes are, all of these things, the way you were raised, the way you were loved, the way you were unloved, the way you were taken care of, the way you weren't taken care of, and how you chose
if you're an innie or an outie belly
yourself.
Button. Yes.
Yes. All of those things shape you into an individual with very individual tendencies.
Totally.
No two are alike.
No.
And many are very similar, but every single one of them is going to check out of this shell at some point.
Yes. And they're all going to have a slightly different experience.
Yeah.
You know, guys fighting in Normandy, yeah, they all died, but they had a different perspective of it.
Yeah.
Whether it was literal by the difference of feet or their religious background or whatever. And you could say, oh, they all died the same way. Did they? Did they really all die the same way? They all got shot in the head or shot in the body or shot in the chest. They all got shot. But did they all die the same? Some were atheists. Some were, you know, agnostics. Some were Christians. Some were Jews. Some were, you know, any pick your religion.
You know, I mean, different flavors of Christian.
Different flavors of Christian, exactly. Because, that's the thing. Is a lot of people just go, oh, Christian. It's like, no, Christian is, there's a whole ton of different Christian,
yeah,
you know?
I mean, I think the Mormons think that there's, you know, separate planets.
Yes, you get your own planet when you die. So
but
it's
only
like
4,000 people can go to heaven.
Like, yes. 44,000.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Seventh-day Adventist, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
See, some of these I know. Some of these I know. Some of the.
But all of this. All of this can
or 144,000
think about life.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know, and that's the whole thing is it's like it's death. And when you said cilantro is a little thing, death is the biggest thing that there is.
Yeah.
And what's interesting though is that when you can get to where you can look at everything, and this is the place where I'm at now where I start loving myself more, is where I can say, okay, I lose my job. Am I going to die? No. I tried this business. It's going to fail. Am I going to die? No. I get in a relationship. It fails. Am I going to die? No. Those are the kind of things that tell me.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm in a great relationship. That's not an issue. But I'm just saying for people out there listening to be able to say, hey, what's the absolute worst thing that can happen? You die.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I can make that a little bit easier to deal with, then I feel my job has been done.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. You know, and again, it's that whole helping other people. It's not just about you. It's about helping others. And if I can help others.
This is the ride.
Yes.
So why not make it the best ride you can make it?
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to get to do it again, maybe.
Maybe, or maybe you do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is something that we go up and we go, or, you know, wherever. Everybody thinks it's up. Yeah. Why does heaven have to be up?
Right.
I mean, because heaven up to me would be, you know, facing in a different direction than someone in Australia. So why is heaven up? Is heaven 20,000 feet in the atmosphere? Is it 3 miles away from Earth? No, heaven would be wherever. It's out. You know, for all we know, heaven is on Pluto. You know, and they just downgraded it. So there's not as many people getting in.
Well, only 44,000. Well, it sounds like this is going to be really, really interesting, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun. So,
thanks for talking to me, Tim.
Thanks, man. I enjoyed it. This was, this was definitely a lot of fun as well.
If you want to hear more of that, be sure to stay tuned, because Let's Laugh About Death is launching wherever podcasts are found at the end of June. You can find it at letslaughaboutdeath.com. You can also go to the Facebook page, Let's Laugh About Death. If it's not up now, it's going to be very soon. There, like I said at the beginning, there's going to be a teaser at the end of this episode, including a theme song written by yours truly. As for me, I think I'm going to go lay down. I'm feeling like a can of smashed assholes right now. So as always, until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.
You ever wonder what happens when we die? Do we go to heaven? Do we go to hell? Who knows? It's one of those things that happens to everybody, and we all wonder what the deal is. But the irony is that we don't get that answer until we're gone. It's one of those things that everybody faces. Some people don't want to admit it, and some people think it's never going to happen to them. But deep down inside, they know it's coming. My name is Tim Rooney, host of Let's Laugh About Death, the dramedy podcast that celebrates life while contemplating the inevitable. Join me every Monday beginning this June as I talk with a different guest every week, and we have a conversation about the possibilities of what happens when it's all over. I'm going to talk to people of different backgrounds, different faiths, different occupations. I want to get to know the different experiences that people have had with death, whether it's family members, whether it's close calls of their own. Maybe they had instances where they've witnessed death firsthand. You know, maybe they're a police officer and they saw someone die in their arms, or maybe it's somebody who performed last rites as a priest. I want to get all of their opinions. I want to get all of their ideas of what they believe or at least think might happen when we die. It's going to be an interesting ride. Until then, have yourself a good day. Have yourself a good life.
Well, you only live once, so maybe not. And this life right now might be all we've got. So let's contemplate the hereafter while we speculate. About this grim thing that happens to us all after that final curtain call. But before you take that final breath, let's laugh about death.